be beneficial, or will it be another tool of exploitation? Join Emmanuel Goldstein and his crew on Wednesdays from 7 to 8 p.m. and hear the perspective of the editor and publisher of 2600 Magazine, a source for the latest in tech security flaws. Even if you aren't tech savvy, you deserve to know if that new device will end up helping or hindering your life. Listen to Off the Hook on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. here on WBAI 99.5 FM and online at WBAI.org.
February 12th, 2016, stand with the MOVE organization for an evening of solidarity for parole for MOVE political prisoners. Join us for a light supper at 6:30 p.m., then from 7 to 10 p.m. Stand with Ramona Africa, Pam Africa, Harabic Tubman, Johanna Fernandez, Momia Abu-Jamal, and so many others at the Malcolm X Dr. Betty Shabazz Educational Center, located at 3940 Broadway and 165th Street, New York, New York. For more info, you can call 347-641-2773 or go to www.onamove.com. Free to move now.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
Hello, listeners. WBAI is having its winter fun drive from February 1st to the 28th. Though it may not always seem this way, there is a whole universe behind your radio.
Really?
And this month, we're asking listeners like you to support our journey.
But how?
It's simple. For a minimum of $10 a month, subscribe and become a member. And you get free gifts, like a tote bag, discount card, and you can attend exciting events.
Wow, cheap giving is.
And you're supporting independent progressive radio.
Sign me up, Scotty.
So call today at 212-209-2950.
Or go to give2wbai.org. Once again, that's give2wbai.org.
Ave Maria, que rico!
Hi, friends. This is the information you've been waiting for. WBAI Latin Music Benefit Fundraiser will be held on April 1st at SOB's. 204 Varick Street in downtown Manhattan, and will be featuring the music of the Mambo Legends, formerly the Tito Puente Orchestra, with vocalist Cita Rodriguez. Also myself, Chico Alvarez. I'll be performing with Conjunto Sabor, the U.S. debut of String Bembe with Tatiana Ferre and Daramil Gonzalez, and the SOB debut of Nahibe La Gitana and Orquesta Tribu. Doors open at 6 p.m. until 11. A $25 donation will go straight to WBAI. Tickets go on sale February 8th, available online at WBAI.org or SOB's upcoming events website. Support Latin music shows New World Gallery and Con Sabor Latino every Saturday and Sunday from 3 to 6 p.m. on WBAI 99.5 FM or WBAI.org.
You're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM Pacifica Radio and online at WBAI.org.
The role of media in a democratic society should be to empower people to make decisions.
WBAI, speaking truth to power for over 50 years.
You have very few powerful media outlets that are actually doing the two things that I think are the most central aims of good journalism, which is to give voice to the voiceless and hold those in power accountable.
WBAI, your community alternative.
And you're listening to radio station WBAI New York. Time is just about 7 o'clock. Time for a special two-hour edition of Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse. Thank you.
And you're listening to Off the Hook, where nothing's working as usual. Sorry, we were supposed to have North Korea music underneath us, and apparently that's not to be, because somebody switched the switch to something else. Should be CD2, Kyle. All right. This is Emmanuel. It's going to be a great night. Joined tonight by Mike.
Should I say something about the great leader anyway?
Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
Kyle.
Hello.
And Bernie S.
Greetings from Philadelphia.
You know what? Let me just take the thing and put it in the other CD player that we know works. You guys fill time.
It's an exciting week to be here on the air because it is the Winter Fun Drive.
Yes, indeed. And our friend Jim is here.
Hi.
That's true.
Hi, Jim.
Hey, Jim.
Hi.
So that's good news all around.
And we're excited to kick off the winter fundraising.
That's what I just said.
No. Over here on this side of the studio.
Well, so our audience can't see that you're all the way on the other side of the studio from me.
Well, it's dimensional, Mike.
It's at least a meter away. So
it's a long way.
The news is just reaching you?
Yeah. Wind of the fundraiser.
It's really exciting because this is how we keep ourselves on the air.
Yeah, now that's much better. That's a better way to enter the programming night. Of course, the North Korean classic Under the Light of the Moon.
Better than a fun drive?
I'm sorry?
You're saying this is better than a fun drive?
No, this is an addition to the fun drive. This is the kind of music that will get people flocking to the phones. And once they make the call, then we ask them to contribute to keep things going. So here we are, welcome Mike, Rob, Kyle, and Bernie. This is a special two-hour edition, and we are playing North Korean music for the entire 2 hours, but not out loud, because we'll be playing other things as well, but it will be going in the background. And there's a reason for that, too, which we'll get to a little bit later. This is the opening night of what season is this? Winter fundraiser.
I mean, it may not feel like it, especially in the studio, but uh-huh. It's winter somewhere in this hemisphere.
Yes. Okay, Reggie's here to figure out what happened this time. I know how to press the play button. This doesn't work.
Oh.
Yeah. It doesn't come over here because somebody... Well, now you turned us off. Now you turned the music off.
All right. Wow. Oh, okay, wait a minute. Okay, now.
What? You think it's going to work just by doing that? We did that before.
So we had it backwards.
Try it.
All right, guys, fill time while I go back and...
I mean, it wouldn't be the same if everything just worked, right? Like, it would be very disappointing. And we have a two-hour show tonight, so it's... especially appropriate.
Not anymore. We have an hour and 15 minutes.
We will get into why we're playing this a little later, but suffice to say, it is mostly in honor of the fun drive that we are listening to these stirring, stirring musical. I don't even know how you describe it. Opera? I believe it is a form of opera.
It's a rousing anthem.
I think it deserves its own category. Really, opera is sort of limiting.
I mean, when Dear Leader invented the opera, I think he would have wanted us to appreciate it on this level.
It was him, right?
Yes, of course.
Yeah. No, that sounds correct.
You're going to get shot for this, you realize.
You're going to get banned from Pyongyang. It's okay. But
I think that's really what this station embodies. Not necessarily those consequences, but it's really about the ability to say all kinds of things and share those perspectives with the listening audience. So we like to remind everyone around this time and during these drives when we're here with you that it's about keeping speech and diverse opinions on the airwaves and contributing to the wider spectrum of ideas that are out there.
Sorry about that. Nothing says diverse spectrum of ideas like the Democratic People's Republic of Korea.
Yes. Wait, Mike, I'm glad you brought that up.
What? I don't even understand what I'm saying.
Yeah,
I don't
know
why you're agreeing.
It's fine. Just let that wave of loyalty and dedication.
I don't have any loyalty or dedication.
I'll tell
you
where we have loyalty and dedication, and that's to this radio station and this program. Because
thank you, Rob.
At a station like this could, it's one of the very few venues that we can truly express what we feel we need to, and that is protected and kept around for us to do this. And it's hanging by a tenuous thread, as are so many
just like this analogy.
In a few short moments, we will share all the particulars about what we're offering this evening, mm-hmm. As well as ways you can get in touch with the tally room, as we have called it in the past. So a lot of exciting things to look forward to there, but it is a celebration of Off the Hook and WBAI and this grand tradition of community radio. Now in Brooklyn, we've done many of. I think last time we were doing this kind of fundraising, we were in a different location. Well, it's partly due to people's support and the exciting changes that have taken place that we have this interesting studio that throws a diversity of configurations our way. But regardless of those configurations, we continue to build and innovate and share news and ideas from the hacker perspective with the world. And we're very grateful to be a part of WBAI and a part of that community of diverse voices.
Quite so. And there's really something about all of this that does embody the hacker spirit. We're basically, like we can repair our broadcast equipment while broadcasting through it because we're a bunch of hackers and geeks, and this is the sort of thing we're good at.
Yeah, I had everything all planned out to seg perfectly, and it just takes one thing failing. But thanks, Reggie, for hooking up a Mac so that we could play CDs later.
I mean, no way
of doing it otherwise.
I was noting before the show to Rob, there's a precariously placed plug that someday will fall out of the wall, and I believe that is what all the other equipment is attached to. And so there's sort of a week to week, I watch it slowly hang more precariously away from the outlet. And I know I won't be here when it happens, but someday the entire board will go dark, and it will be because that socket falls out of the wall. Just part of the diversity and fascinating ride that is engineering here at Off the Wall, Off the Hook and WBAI.
For the listeners who can't see us, I should point out that Kyle is the one sitting closest to this plug.
So yeah, I sit in the same sort of location, and I can check in on this particular outlet that is the entire technical entourage here hinges upon.
You could also embody the hacker spirit yourself and just kick it into place.
Right, or move it a little closer so there's a little slack, but I'm worried that will be the movement that actually pushes it over and out of the actual outlet. I'm sure someone could push it in further, And so on.
Okay.
But, are we working now?
Well, things are working, yes, but unfortunately we lost 15 minutes due to this.
Well, it sounds great.
Well, yeah, that's the part we got working at the beginning of the show, but getting the rest of the equipment working took a little bit longer. Sorry about that, but there's no time for us to get in here before the show to make sure things are working. So, yeah, we are in the middle of a fundraiser. This is the winter fundraiser. We're on for 2 hours, and what we're offering tonight is a package of something that I'm completely blown away by. I always am, just by going through all the things that are presented. From our last conference, which took place in 2014, it was called HopeX, took place in New York City. And we have another conference coming up in July 22nd through 24th at Hotel Pennsylvania. That's called the 11th Hope. It's going to be even better somehow. It's going to be even better than the one we did in 2014.
I don't believe you.
Yeah, well, it's every time you say that, but every time we do it. And what we're going to do tonight is just give you an example of some of the things that have taken place simply at the last conference, which is simply unbelievable. The diversity of people, the skill set, it's just, like I said, it blows me away.
This is a lot of fun for me. I love going back and listening to some of these, and it really is the amount of the way we're able to condense and coalesce all these interests and ideas and get them around this structure of a talk and a presentation. It's kind of amazingly simple, but it's really beautiful in the end what we come up with, and we just get these great opinions and ideas that may illuminate your perspective and turn you on to something you had no idea you'd be interested in, and it really is fun and gets me excited about the event coming up in July.
Yes. We have picked a handful of talks here to highlight. But what we are offering for people who call in, and who wants to give out the phone number? Go ahead.
212-209-2950.
That's right. 212-209-2950 is the number to call to pledge. And if you pledge only $50, you will get every single one of the talks that we presented at HopeX in 2014 on DVD. You'll get about 100 DVDs in the mail. That's going to be something.
I was putting these premiums into the system last night, and I assumed there must be some mistake. You get all these DVDs for a pledge of $50?
That's right. That's right. But it gets even better than that. If you don't want 100 DVDs showing up at your door, you can get something much smaller that has the same amount of information. And that is the HopeX thumb drive. It's 64 gigs. That's how big the thumb drive is. And it contains all of the talks in full quality MP4 format, I believe. You're free to copy them, put them on your own system. And then you have a 64 gig thumb drive as well. And that's for a pledge of $75 to 212-209-2950. So it's really...
So how many talks?
About 100.
100 talks.
At least 100, I think.
The size of my thumb.
Yeah.
Pledge of $75.
And some of them are longer than an hour, too, which makes it even better. So it's an amazing amount of material. But, you know, don't believe me. Don't take my word for it. I'd like to just play an excerpt from one of the talks. How many of you, did any of you, go to a talk called Disruptive Wearable Technology?
I did not, because one of the sad things about the HOPE conference is, even for those of us who attended, it is impossible to see every talk.
That's true. That's true.
But if you got the thumb drive or the DVDs, you can watch them all.
Yes. Yeah, so don't be like Mike and miss this talk, because it's a really, really good talk. And you can see it for yourself on either a thumb drive or a DVD if you pledge to 212-209-2950. Now, this particular talk was presented by Becky Stern. She's the director of wearable electronics at Adafruit. And they're a really awesome organization. You probably heard about them in the hacker world. I'll read you a little bit of the synopsis of the talk. As technology becomes ever more embedded in the fabric of our society and even our clothes, we must grapple with ever more complicated trade-offs regarding privacy and security. This talk will highlight disruptive wearable technologies that creatively and assertively address these modern technological and social changes. Come, learn about underwear that tattles on a TSA agent's wandering fingers during a secondary screening, makeup that makes you imperceptible to facial recognition software, and eye-tracking glasses that let a paralyzed graffiti writer tag again. I mean, this is just so awesome. This represents the kinds of things that we strive for in presenting conferences of thousands of hackers from around the world. This kind of creativity and technology and just sharing of the information. And I know that this year it's going to be even more of a step in the right direction. So let's listen to this excerpt, and hopefully it'll work on this machine. And we'll be back, hopefully, with a lot of phone calls, 212-209-2950.
So, hi, everybody. If you don't know me, my name is Becky Stern. I'm the director of wearable electronics at Adafruit Industries, a DIY electronics kit company here in New York City. It's okay? And we make parts and sensor breakouts and tutorials and source code for makers and hackers to build their own technology and mod the stuff they already have. But my passion is combining electronics and crafts to make unexpected, useful, self-expressive, and mischievous wearable electronics. You good there? Okay. But in addition to making stuff with electronics, I'm no stranger to using fashion as a hacking tool for culture. This is a project I volunteered on called Wall Suits, where we brought a whole bunch of donated business suits for men and women to Zuccotti Park for the Occupy Wall Street protesters, and we offered haircuts and a changing booth to transform their look so that their appearance might be more palatable to those they wished to affect, so their message would be more likely to be heard. And there's me down in the corner there at the pants hemming station. So to me, the definition of disruptive wearable technology is the application of science that disturbs or interrupts an activity. I'm not so much talking about the definition of disruptive that means like groundbreaking or innovative, because obviously most of these things will already do that, but the ones that interrupt or disturb. They can, disruptive wearable tech can solve some problems, probably by creating some problems. If you took the subway here, maybe something like this could have helped you. And the projects I'm going to share with you today cover like the last 10 years of the creative use of technology that impacts culture, things that you wear on your person. This is the creative misuse of some anti-bird technology from the garden store implemented by a student in Singapore named Suming Cheng. I think that wearables have the potential to inspire us, protect us, express ourselves, and give us real-life superpowers. And a lot of that hacking the body culture comes from our favorite place, MIT. Up here we've got Steve Mann with, some people call him, whether you agree with it or not, the grandfather of Google Glass, Leah Beakley, the inventor of the LilyPad Arduino, Aya Badir, founder of Little Bits, and my boss, Lamour Fried, who, in her spare time likes to make cell phone jammers. There's other places, a lot of academic places, but I think the main place a lot of this culture comes from is MIT. NYU's Interactive Telecommunications Program, lately when I went through my slides, was like, wow, there's a lot represented there. And so we'll just dive right in. I'm going to show you a bunch of projects. And they're more or less in chronological order. We'll go take it back to 2005 from the old Afrotech Mods site. Raise your hand if you're a big fan. Yeah. I had to fetch this from archive.org because the site's a lot different now. These are the Pika shoes. They have an ion generator in the sole of the shoe, and it helps you build up a static charge so that you can shock people by touching them. And they're not very, we're going to go through and see maybe things get a little bit more fashionable, and I'll talk about fashion at the end, but these are definitely mischievous, right? And they're useful, and they give you that superpower, like Pikachu. It's hard to get these parts. I've been told it's hard to get the ion generators now, so that's one reason you can't build this project yourself right now. But it is a how-to guide. This is Random Search by Aya Badir. It's her thesis project from MIT, and it's an undergarment that records the location and pressure of the way you're touched during a secondary screening at the airport. And she did a lot of research to make this garment undetectable by X-ray so that she could wear it through the airport and not be secondarily screened because of the project, but rather. So she used those are conductive Velcro up there, and then these are the fabric sensors that she did to test there. Here I have a little video. Oh, sorry. We'll play the video. Oh, teaser. So, as a Middle Eastern woman, she felt extra targeted and then powerless to, complain if someone touched her inappropriately. And she was secondary screened, all the time. And so this garment gives her the power to track that misconduct So you'll see that's a theme going through, that we have wearable electronics and technology can make us feel powerful. Here she is proving that it doesn't go off in the metal detector. Let's go ahead. So this is one of two projects of my own that I put in, that I managed to weasel into my slideshow. This is the laptop CompuBody sock. Maybe you've seen it before and you didn't know I made it. Well, because it's popular on the internet, but I made this. I knit it with my own two knitting needles. I made it as a sculpture, an art piece. I was in grad school, and I wanted to sort of highlight the attention space that you have when you're using the computer, like nothing else matters. But the fun thing about art is that the meaning is whatever the viewer decides it is, right? And I'm big into that. Like, if whatever your interpretation of is art. So if you feel like you don't get art, you go to the museum. It's whatever you think it's about. And it's the artist's job to sort of, like, raise questions that make you get gears moving in your head. And that means that once it's out there in the world, on the internet, like, commentary happens, you know? Like, I didn't think it was for porn, but I guess that's what it's for. But really, when I made it, my fingers were cold when I was typing, and I wanted to make a keyboard cozy, and then I just, like, couldn't stop knitting. I read an article, actually, that Edward Snowden uses something like this, like a big red hoodie to, like, cover his computer, because then you can't see typing or, like, what's on your screen. This is my old roommate, who's such a good sport. We took a trip to Maker Faire, and he modeled for me on the airplane. The next project is the iWriter. It's by members of Free Art and Technology, or FAT. I'm also a member of that group, but I didn't work on this project, so it doesn't count as mine. Yeah, FAT love. And it's the iWriter is a pair of eye-tracking glasses that let this paralyzed graffiti artist draw again. And I think it's really powerful. And it's made with DIY tech, low-cost, stupid camera, IR LEDs, cheap plastic glasses. And I have a little video about that.
All right, and that was an excerpt from HopeX. What do you guys think?
I liked it.
I wish I had seen the whole talk.
Well, you can see the whole talk if you pledge now. $50 for the DVDs, $75 for the thumb drive. You'll get that plus about 99 other talks, and you'll be able to see just what Becky was talking about.
Wait, I don't think I understood. These are all video.
Yes. You were hearing audio because this is radio. But there is video attached to this as well.
Yeah, exactly. If you were listening and you were wondering what she was referring to when she was showing off pictures of things, or you would have liked to see them, you can, because we're going to present them in wonderfully clear HD video.
Yes, and 212-209-2950 is the number to call to pledge to get this talk and about 99 others from HopeX.
A lot of stuff going on with textiles and new materials and stuff. That's exciting. I want to know more about this kind of integration of clothing and sensors and stuff like that.
Yeah,
that's
a clear
that's
path
really
for Kyle to make a phone call to pledge for this so he can find out more about this and 99 other talks.
Well, It wasn't a prediction I had, but I think, you know, fashion is always fashionable. So why not incorporate fashion and this new electronic ability you can integrate into them.
And Becky Stern, who was speaking, is well known for working at the crossroads of hacking and fashion. Her work is you might have seen it in Make Magazine if you keep up with that, or at Maker Faire, such events. And she does really, really brilliant things. And she was good enough to bring them to Hope.
Cool.
And
wow.
Of course, if you're not familiar with her work, what better way to become familiar than to see her full talk?
Absolutely. 212-209-2950 to get this and all the other talks from HopeX in 2014. Again, pledge $50 gets you all the DVDs. Pledge of $75 gets you all the files on a 64-gig thumb drive. Bernie, what do you think of this talk?
I didn't catch that talk either because, you know, we're running around trying to help the conference happen. And as Mike pointed out, it's impossible, even if you're just a bystander at Hope and not one of the organizers. There's no way you can see all the talks because we have like three of them going on at once. So it's just an extravaganza of content. But now, in the palm of your hand, you can have about 100 Hope talks and panels and other great information and support this radio station for a mere $75 for the flash drive. Or if you want to have 100 DVDs, which is a little unwieldy, that's $50. Frankly, Emmanuel, I think you're crazy for donating all this, because this is a tremendous value. 100 DVDs for $50, that's 50 cents per DVD, with each an amazing video of a talk.
Well, don't talk me out of it. Now that you mention that, it does seem like an awful lot that we're giving away here.
This is like the deal of the century. Really, this is pretty amazing. So I just want to encourage our listeners, even if you went to the HOPEX conference, you know, we had Daniel Ellsberg and Edward Snowden and some really amazing speakers at that conference. Even if you were there, I doubt you've seen all the talks. So call 212-209-2950, and you will have them all. You can hold them in your hands, and you can still support this radio station, which is the only station I know of that will allow us to cover this stuff in such depth and detail.
Also, these DVDs are things that we make available on our own store, and I can't tell you on the radio how much we charge for them because that's against the rules, but I can tell you that this is significantly less than you would pay to get all of these in one package at one time anywhere else but here at WBAI, because it's our donation to the station and to our supporters for helping us out and helping us stay on the air. So call 212-209-2950, or you could use the internet. Go to give2wbai.org. And find the listing for the Hope DVDs there, or the Hope Jump Drive.
Yeah, we have to get the exact phrasing right, because if you don't get it exactly right, sometimes they can't find it. This would be the Hope Archives Thumb Drive and the Hope Archives DVD Collection. So if you're having trouble on the phone, 212-209-2950, or you can't find it at give2wbai.org, that's what you have to look for. And it's right there, looking at it right now. 212-209-2950. We have another talk. Yes, there's more than one talk. Well, we're not going to play all 99.
One could.
And the 99 is just an estimate. I don't know. I lost track after a while. But this is another talk that we really haven't excerpted before, and I think it's a good idea to do this. This is a talk given by hacker, safecracker, and computer science professor Matt Blaze, who... did a talk on, it was called Geolocation, Location, Location, Technology and Countermeasures for Mobile Location Surveillance, something we talk about week after week here on this particular program. I'll read you a little bit of the abstract to this. We all know that law enforcement and private companies, for that matter, can track you through your mobile phone, but how exactly does tracking work? How precise are they? When can they get this data? And is there anything you can do to obscure your movements without moving into a Faraday cage? This talk will discuss the various technologies that law enforcement, intelligence agencies, and private industry use to track individual movements. And there are a surprising number of different techniques. This is a talk that I didn't get to see. Any of you folks managed to see this one?
No,
I did not.
Bernie,
no.
How about you?
I did catch it. I really wanted to. I know Matt. He's one of our really valued volunteers making the Hope Conference happening. And I caught part of it, but then I followed up later. I watched the video later. And it's amazing. If you're concerned about surveillance of your cell phone or surveillance of you through your cell phone, not just by our government, but by companies and other entities, this is a worthwhile talk to listen to and watch. It's pretty eye-opening, kind of scary, but it's worth checking out.
Okay, well, let's do just that. Let's get a little taste of the geolocation, location, location talk from HOPEX. Again, phone number 212-209-2950. A pledge of $50 gets you all the talks on DVD. A pledge of $75 gets you all the talks on a 64-gig thumb drive. 212-209-2950.
So, you know, this is going to be very much focused on, in 2014, what are some of the open technological, legal, and policy questions related to tracking mobile devices, and how does it actually work? So, when we say mobile devices, what are we talking about? So, essentially, mobile devices, for our purposes here, are computers that have a couple of special features that make them particularly interesting from the point of view of tracking and make them particularly important from the point of view of protecting or violating your privacy. The first property of a mobile device is that it's mobile. You carry it around with you, very often everywhere. And, you know, the mobile phone is sort of the classic example of this thing that we're really, people would sooner leave their house, you know, without their keys or their pants than without their phones, right? These devices have lots of sensors crammed into them. They know a lot about what their environment is. In particular, these devices themselves generally know where they are. They generally have GPS units. They generally have directional sensors like compasses and so on, and they have the capability of transmitting signals to the outside world in a number of different ways. They have a cellular phone transmitter. They often will have data, cellular data services. They often have Wi-Fi. They often have Bluetooth, and they often have other things that they may that you may or may not even be aware are existing. And then finally, mobile devices have this property that they, much more than the computers that we as hackers sort of grew up learning about, these are much more heavily tied to network-based services of various kinds provided by various places than other kinds of computing devices that that we use. These devices are designed to be online, and not only are they designed to be online, they're designed to be online in multiple ways in order to function the way we expect them to function. Now, you know, at one end of the spectrum, we have old-fashioned, you know, dumb mobile phones, phones that don't have touch screens, that you can't run apps on, and so on. And, you know, these have been kind of upgraded to include more computational capability, smartphones, tablets. And then there's this idea of the Internet of Things. Your car likely contains a number of mobile devices, very often that have been subscribed to with different services on your behalf when the car was built. And you may not have any direct relationship that you know about with the service provider that's providing them. And it's, you know, driving around with you everywhere you go. Your toaster and your refrigerator and so on will soon be followed, although your refrigerator is a little less mobile than your car is. Right, unless it's running. Yes, very good. Okay. Okay, you get the worst joke of the conference award. Okay. So let's go to kind of some very oversimplified how phones work kind of a baseline understanding the basic cellular technology. So basically, your phone handset, this device, is essentially a fairly low power, because its battery has to last a long time, and there are also, you know, health effects from zapping you with high levels of microwave radiation. So it's inherently a low power device that has a crappy antenna, making it effectively an even more low power two-way radio that you expect to have universal connectivity pretty much everywhere you go. So to make up for the fact that the range of your mobile phone is inherently very limited, it can only reach, maybe a mile or so under even the most ideal circumstances, and in an urban area with lots of obstructions around it, considerably less than that. The cellular carrier has to build out a network of towers, which are called cell sites, that have essentially a connection to the back infrastructure, to the telephone network, to their network, such that there is a tower, a cell site, within range of your phone wherever you want to take it. And, you know, the term cellular phone, which is more commonly used in the U.S., in Europe they call them mobile phones. But the term cellular phones comes from the idea that you think of these ranges of the towers as cells that are adjacent to each other, tiled across a map. And you're in one particular cell at any time that has the best coverage of your phone. So essentially, a mobile phone company is primarily in the real estate business to rent these tower locations to put their cell sites in. And your handset is essentially looking for the cell tower that's broadcasting a signal, and you're also broadcasting a signal, and you figure out which of these cell sites is within range and which has the best signal coverage where you are at any given moment, and registers with that that. Now, it has to do that in order to work. It has to do that even when you're not making a phone call, because that's the mechanism that your phone relies on in order to be able to receive calls. We have to know where you are in the network in order to know where to route an incoming call to you. So what this essentially says is that right off the bat, this device is at least doing some sort of course tracking of your location, because you it has to in order to work that way. We know what cell you're in because that information has to be recorded with the cellular provider in order to route incoming calls to you. And as you move around, you're re-registering with different cells. And it's generally the one that's nearest you. And that essentially list of registrations identifies where you are within the radio range of your phone. So that's the sort of oversimplified version of this. How many people knew that already? Well, if I could see anything, I'd imagine everyone's raising their hand right now, right? This is, but I can't see a thing, so I'm just going to pretend that everybody, that there are people in the room. I assume all of you have taken your clothes off or something. I just cannot see a thing up here. Okay. This is sort of the oversimplified version. So you might say, okay, well, I can live with that, right? The radio range of my phone is maybe a mile, so that means I'm within a 1 mile radius of this. This thing can only track me within about a mile, right? Because that's, you know, the cell companies, of course, want to economize. They're primarily in the real estate business. They want to economize on how many of these expensive towers they have to put up and all this expensive space that they have to rent. And they're going to want to get away with putting as few of those up as they possibly can. And what you might say is, well, we should put them up so that their distance is essentially the typical radio range of one of these phones, and that's a mile or two apart from each other. And so that's the limit of the resolution of the tracking that these kinds of devices do as you're registering with the network. But it turns out that now that everyone has one of these things, the radio range is not the limiting factor of how close or how far apart you can get away with having these. Because everybody wants one of these devices, and because the amount of radio spectrum allocated to cellular and mobile phone services is inherently a scarce resource. There's a limit to how much of it there is, and we're using more of it than there are users. And we're demanding more and more high bandwidth services to take up that limited amount of radio spectrum. The capacity of a cell tower is reached, particularly in any kind of populated area, well before the radio range radius would say you'd have to build another one. So you're going to reach all of the radio spectrum capacity for a cell tower within a much, much smaller, within all the users within a much, much smaller radius than you would if you were just looking at the radio range. And in fact, what that means is that how do you deal with this? Well, we could get more spectrum, but we've kind of reached the limit of that. They keep auctioning off more by trying to steal it away from television stations and public safety users. But, you know, we can't auction off spectrum fast enough to meet the demand. So what do you do? Well, what you have to do is have each of these towers serve fewer users. But everybody wants one. So how do you deal with this? Well, you put more towers in. You make the density of these cell sites closer and closer spaced together, so that instead of a 1 mile radius, it's going to have a small enough radius to be able to serve the users that are within range of this. So what effectively this means is that because everyone has one of these things, your location that's revealed by pairing with the nearest cell tower is going to be a much higher resolution, a much finer grained resolution than it was, you know, 20 years ago when cell phones were this sort of luxury item that rich rich, self-important people had. Now, everyone is a rich, self-important person. And what that means is that we're tracked, as a sort of side effect of that, we're tracked with much more high resolution when we do this.
And that is an excerpt from the Matt Blaze talk on geolocation at HopeX that we are making available for people who pledge to WBAI tonight. Bernie, what do you think of that talk?
You just started getting into the scary part. Then he starts going into how you can be tracked with by Wi-Fi and your Bluetooth headset mm-hmm. and other ways, and how all this data is compiled and sliced and diced and recorded and logged forever about where you've been and where you go and all that. So it's worth checking out, and you can do that by pledging your support to this radio station at the same time by calling 212-209-2950 and pledging a mere $50. You get a stack of 100 DVDs with this and 99 other amazing talks, approximately. Or for $75, you can get it all in the palm of your hand on a flash drive. But this is at a tremendous information value. There's no way you're going to get this much content anywhere else for this price and support WBAI. So give us a call, 212-209-2950. Oh, and our last premiums, they're just going out now, aren't they?
I believe so. I believe everything is pretty much in the hands of the right people.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. It has all been delivered.
Yes.
Bernie, you sort of hand-waved away at the end of what you just said, that and you support WBAI, but I want to emphasize that this is really all linked. We would not be able to do the conferences without the audience that we build here on WBAI. No other radio station in the world would give the likes of us a radio program on an FM transmitter in a major city like New York City to connect with the people we connect with you, the audience, connect with people like Matt Blaze, to be able to produce conferences like this, to be able to produce talks like the ones you'll get if you call 212-209-2950 and pledge. And if we go off the air, it really is putting a hamper on this sort of activity. And so we really want you to support us to keep us on the air, and that is why we thank you with these thank you premiums.
You mentioned that we're on an FM broadcast signal, correct?
That's true.
We're also in New York City, correct? What else did you mention? On top of the Empire State Building, right?
I didn't say that, but it's
okay.
All
right, but I'm just trying to help out here. Yeah. Was there anything else? Any other qualifiers you had there as far as major signal, powerful,
getting lots of watts,
all different. Yeah, lots of watts. Okay, what you left out was that we're in the middle of the FM dial, and being in the middle of the FM dial means people expect to find commercial stations there. You might notice there's this ghetto over to the left end of the FM dial where they stick all the non-commercial stations. Everything below 92 is supposed to be non-commercial. And somehow we managed to escape and and live free here in 99.5, where you would expect to hear a country music station or a top 40 station or another sports station or something like that. But somehow we managed to hack the airwaves and stay in the middle. There's a long story behind it. We've been on the air since 1960, but it's very unusual to have that kind of access, to be able to broadcast something to so many people in a major city, but also in the middle of the FM dial. So it's something that is so precious and unique, and hopefully will always be prized by our listeners. And that's the reason why we have to do these things every few years. You know how expensive it is to keep a radio station going, to pay the rent on the tower, and all the other things that are involved in maintaining, let alone expanding what it is that we do. So that's why we ask for your support. 212-209-2950. $50 may not seem like that much. What are you going to solve with $50? Well, you know what? A bunch of people calling in doing that suddenly solves some big problems. So your contribution does count. It does add up. It's all part of the whole jigsaw puzzle. 212-209-2950. $50. You get all the talks on DVD. $75, you get all the talks on a 64-gig thumb drive, and you can copy them to your heart's content and share them and do anything else.
Yeah, you mentioned
Emmanuel.
Go ahead, Bernie, and then Rob.
Sorry to interrupt you there, Rob. One of the advantages of getting this content this way, either on DVD or on a USB flash drive, is it doesn't take up room on whatever device you're playing it on. It's on its own physical media. I know people laugh at me for having a physical media fetish, but
that's
you know,
not why they're laughing.
Oh, okay. Was that a flash drive in your pocket, or anyway, the flash drive is the size of your thumb, and you got 100 videos from talks at the Hope X conference. It's amazing stuff, and it doesn't take up any space on your computer.
Yes.
So that's why this is a great thing. But you're mainly, as Mike pointed out, you're supporting a radio station that has, unfortunately, significant expenses operating an FM transmitter in the middle of a major market on top of the Empire State Building, which, yeah, that may seem antiquated, but it's really awesome. It's unequaled by any other no other hacker show. If like there's that many hacker shows, have this kind of an audience in a major market.
Well, isn't that amazing? When you say it's antiquated, what's antiquated?
Well, a lot of people think that the FM broadcast radio is an antique, obsolete medium.
Oh,
I disagree.
They think that, eh? Wow.
A lot of people think that. A lot of people, you can't get it, stream it over the internet and listen to it on. Well, you know what? No, it's real. This is best fidelity. You're going to get the best fidelity ever with an FM radio listening to the station. But you can also hear it streaming. I am not one of those people that thinks FM radio is obsolete. It's a valued medium. You can drive around, listen to it. You can be. It's got much more potential audience than just people that happen to have expensive devices that connect.
And there are also many ways to listen to our signal, and that does include podcasts. It does include listening on your phone and various other devices, TuneIn apps, and things like that. But that says something that people want to hear what's on the radio and how it gets broadcast. Isn't really the issue. Some people listen over the air. Some people listen online. But to have a radio station, that is the physical point where you produce all these programs and you have people coming together and sharing their talents and making one cohesive package that's on the air 24 hours a day. That's something you don't get very often with podcasts. It's very difficult to have that kind of community. So, yeah, there is some antiquity to it, but there's also some good old fashioned quality that is really, really hard to build from the ground up.
Yeah, and one of my favorite things about this place is the existence of this station is ridiculous. It's a fluke. It's if you look into the history of the station and how it came to be, it was really just the most random sequence of events that led to its existence. It's a sequence of events that would not be repeated again. This could not happen today. What brought the station about in the 1960s, it would not happen today. And if the station were lost, it would not rise again in this form, because that you can't do this today.
Yeah,
you just can't.
You know what? Those of you out there who think that radio is antiquated, go get a radio station then. That's so, you know, so antiquated and worthless, should be easy. Just go out there and get one. And if you're looking for something to do with it, let us know, because we'd love to have an opportunity to have a whole radio station at our disposal.
Also, yes. Okay, we're broadcasting on FM analog radio, which is a very old technology. It's a reliable technology, but we are also streaming on the web. We are also podcasting. We've been podcasting this show since before people called it podcasts.
That's right. In fact, we were one of the first podcasts.
We were.
Someone even thought we might have invented the name, but I checked and we didn't.
I don't think we invented the name, but we were definitely, I mean, I was listening to the show on downloaded audio files since before the general public knew what a downloaded audio file was, and
real
I
audio.
Was loving it.
It was real audio. Remember
it
that?
It was real audio.
Wow.
Yes.
If we had invented the name, we would have given it a better name.
Yeah, I'd like to think that. I would like to think we did, but I'm pretty sure we didn't. But yeah, so there are many different ways that you can receive a signal, but the magic of radio, you never really know how many people are out there. It's different with online. You can actually see how many people are out there. Sometimes you can see a lot about them. And it can be controlled a lot more easily, too. You know, there aren't many people in North Korea that are tapping into online broadcast from different countries, but there are people that sneak radios in and can hear via shortwave or FM or AM things they're not supposed to hear. And that's a freedom that you always have with radio, the freedom of being anonymous, being passive, being able to listen under the covers late at night when your parents tell you to go to bed. You know, it's harder to do that with a computer. All right. Hey, Bernie, what does the name Thomas Drake mean to you?
Wow. He is one of my heroes. He worked for the National Security Agency, and he has a conscience, and he saw some things that were going wrong, illegal things, and he was a whistleblower with the NSA. And guess what happened to him? Instead of rewarding him for finding these problems, NSA, they persecuted him and prosecuted him and tried to destroy his life, and his story was told at Hope X. By the way, Tom Drake is one of the people that inspired Edward Snowden to go the route he did. Ed Snowden realized that Thomas Drake and Bill Binney, another one of the previous Hope speak, a previous Hope speaker, when they went the official route and became a whistleblower and went the proper through proper channels, they got crucified. So Ed Snowden said, you know, that doesn't work. That model doesn't work, and he did it the way he had to do it.
Yeah, and a lot of people know that Edward Snowden was one of our keynote speakers at HopeX. In fact, you'll get his talk in addition to Daniel Ellsberg's talk when you pledge for this package. But not as many people know about Thomas Drake, and that's a shame because his talk is actually an interview with Vivian Weissman, who made the documentary The Hacker Wars. It's so incredible. Kyle, you were playing this the other day, and I was just overhearing it. And I never got a chance to watch the whole thing, but I could not believe how compelling it was. I didn't even realize it was our own conference. It was, wow, this looks like something that, you know, you'd see on HBO or something like that. And it was just really, really riveting. He tells some stories here that that I think would inspire many people, let alone Edward Snowden.
Yeah, it's another angle, another perspective of a lot of the stories and reporting that's gone on in the last couple of years. And it's sort of one of those things that you hear and you realize, wow, okay, so now this other person is enlightening us on what's going on with communications and so on. And it adds sort of, it definitely is emblematic of the plot thickening, so to speak.
Well, Thomas Drake is a decorated U.S. Air Force and U.S. Navy veteran. He was a senior executive and technical director for NSA Software Engineering and Implementation, and that's where he discovered and blew the whistle on massive multi-billion-dollar fraud, waste, and abuse, the failures that led to 9/11, the widespread violations of citizens' rights through secret mass surveillance programs after 9/11. And after years of addressing those issues in vain through official channels, he finally went to the press and soon became the first whistleblower since Daniel Ellsberg in 1971 to be charged with espionage. Well, the whole story is pretty much given in the talk. I don't want to spoil the whole thing, but we will play a little bit of an excerpt.
At least it wasn't martial law, of course.
No.
You can always be thankful for that.
But for this time. Yeah, I like to think, though, that this is a guy that inspired Edward Snowden and who knows how many others, that every time somebody hears a talk like this, every time somebody sees what a person with courage does, it inspires more people to do the same thing, and we have more whistleblowers than ever.
What a great idea to pledge for this premium and send it to your friend who works for the government.
There you go. And if you get the thumb drive, you can send it to everybody who works in the government because you can make all kinds of copies and just keep sending it out. This deserves to be seen by many people and spread around. And that's what I'm hoping we accomplish tonight, getting these DVDs and getting these thumb drives out, as well as getting some much-needed funds for the radio station. 212-209-2950, all 100 or so DVDs will come your way if you pledge $50, and you'll get a 64-gig thumb drive if you pledge $75. 212-209-2950. Let's hear a little bit of a conversation with NSA whistleblower Thomas Drake from the HopeX conference.
And it's important to note that my moment of truth was actually the first week in October of 2001. Now, this is barely 3 weeks after 9/11. I confronted the lead attorney at NSA. He actually showed up in the recent Frontline documentary called The United States of Secrets. And he said, "You don't understand, Mr. Drake." This is after he acknowledged that the White House had approved what they called the program, the President's Surveillance Program. It was always called the program. He said, "You don't understand. We just need the data. We just need the data." And see, when he said that, I was thrown back to a period in my other life, my other day job, when I was a cryptolinguist flying an RC-135s during the Cold War in the European theater. And what country did I become an expert in? What country did I spend many, many years listening in on their communications? East Germany. It was just a very surreal moment, because now I'm realizing that on a far vaster scale that my own government is now deciding that in the interest of national security, we're just going to collect it all. We need to know everything there is to know about anybody at any time, anywhere. And we have the platform to do it. That's what's called internet. And all the telephone systems.
To what end
To what end is the security surveillance state?
It's ultimately about social control. Let no one be naive to believe that somehow there's a morality in collecting all this information and it won't be used for other purposes. And that's precisely what the government is doing.
And if anyone stands up to the power structure like a hacktivist or a whistleblower, they don't just indict you, they try to destroy you. This is what they tried to do to you.
Yeah. What does it mean to have your life destroyed? Okay, just imagine each of you as sovereign human beings coming under the purview of the government as a person of interest and then becoming a target of the government. The government has decided you're an enemy of the state. And imagine that they have the highest power microscope, a digital microscope, and they spend 4 years drilling down into your life. Everything there is to know about you, what will they find out? And how could they use it against you? How could they manipulate facts about your life? Especially when they want to punish you, especially when they want to put you away, as I was. See, I faced a certain reality when the original chief prosecutor came to me in April 2008, before I actually resigned from NSA. And he said, "Mr. Drake, how would you like to spend the rest of your life in prison unless you cooperate with our investigation?" This is how far the government was willing to go to protect national secrets. There was no way they were going to let someone like me and others, but at that time I was the target of their multi-year, multi-million dollar investigation in terms of who had leaked information about the Stellar Wind program to the New York Times, James Rise and Eric Lichtblau. And they were hell-bent to punish somebody. I found out from very deep sources within the government that Cheney had issued a direct edict: find and fry the perpetrators. I don't care who they are, make an object lesson of them, burn them.
Right.
And so when you're on the receiving end of the government with all the powers they have in terms of surveillance and the FBI, they can make life extraordinarily difficult. And so I was made a person of interest in 2006, and I experienced severe electronic surveillance and physical surveillance. I ultimately had FBI agents tailing me no matter where I went, just to make sure they kept track of me. What can I tell you? I mean, I don't think, and I keep talking about this in public, and every time I tell the story, people start to appreciate what it's like if the government decides to destroy you. Look, I listen in on the East German state. I was very familiar with the Stasi and the police state and what they did to isolate and fragment people's lives, okay? Listening in on the lives of others, literally, where they had the entire telephone system designed for surveillance. That's precisely what's happened in this country.
I have another clip, which is of three hacktivists that were targeted, and they've tried to destroy them as well. And I think that we'll go back and forth between your story and the story of the hacktivists, because I think we've found a lot of analogous situations.
Look, you don't speak truth to power. You know, you don't poke the bear in the eye with a stick, right? You don't hold up a mirror and expose government criminality, okay? Government criminality, without them reacting to it. And so, yeah, I found myself behind several eight balls in 2008, and it took them a couple years, and it was the Obama administration, to figure out how to charge me under the Espionage Act.
And that was an excerpt from the Thomas Drake interview that took place at HOPEX here in New York City in the year 2014. Powerful stuff. In fact, I'm a little angry that it ended, because I want to hear more, but that's all we brought with us to the station. However, you can hear the whole thing. For a pledge of $50, you know what? I think this one talk is worth a pledge of $50, but you don't get just this one talk. You get all of the talks at the HOPEX conference, which is about 100 of them. And they're all pretty damn good, if I do say so myself. We picked some real amazing speakers and material to cover. Again, 212-209-2950, a pledge of $50, you'll get 100 DVDs, about 100 DVDs, and a pledge of $75, you'll get the full video files on a 64-gig thumb drive. Again, 212-209-2950, ask for the Hope Archives thumb drive or the Hope Archives DVD set. Amazing stuff. You know, going to hacker conferences for as long as I have, I've seen the growth. I've seen how things have changed over the decades and how, yeah, we used to just talk about breaking into computers and mischief and things like that, and then security holes and various other things. But it's grown so much. There is so much material to cover. And to have somebody like Thomas Drake come to our conference and tell his story, it simply blows me away, to say nothing of Edward Snowden and Daniel Ellsberg, names like this. But then at the same time, we also have people who are just breaking into, no pun intended, breaking into the world of hacking and figuring things out in ways nobody else has done. That's why you might see a talk by a 13-year-old followed by a talk by a college professor and then by somebody who used to work for the government, etc. It's that diverse, that interesting, that vibrant, and that's why our audience is so interesting as well. 212-209-2950. Bernie, bring back memories?
Scary memories. I was there. I listened to Tom talk. I talked with him several times on the phone before he came to Hope, because he was gracious enough to come all the way up from the Washington area where he lives to speak, because he thought this was a really important conference to present his story to, just like Edward Snowden did, just like Bill Binney did, just like so many other people who came to Hope to share important information that they knew there weren't a lot of other venues that would honor and host this kind of valuable information. So if you think this information is valuable, please check it out and support this radio station. Give us a call at 212-209-2950. Support the radio station. Support what we're trying to do, is bringing this kind of information to you and everybody else. And give us a hand, because if you don't, if nobody else does, we're not going to be able to do it anymore, because this venue is just going to disappear.
Absolutely. And, you know, it does my heart good, and I think a lot of people as well, to see a talk like this and to see the young people getting interested in it, because they will never hear that story anyplace else. It's not going to be on the mass media. It's not going to be in the newspaper, except in a very distorted and unfair way. This way you get to actually hear a first-person account. You get to ask questions. You get to actually experience something that you'll remember for the rest of your life. Now, we're talking about DVDs and thumb drives right now, but the conferences take place every couple of years. We have another one coming up in July. In fact, if people want to submit talk ideas, we have our call for participation open right now. If you go to hope.net, you'll see all the information that we have up currently. And if you email speakers at hope.net with your information on what you want to talk about and what your expertise is and various other things like that, you might find yourself being played on WBAI in a couple of years with all kinds of people just basically enraptured, listening to what's coming out over the speakers, saying, wow, this is amazing. This is something that I never thought was possible, and it's inspirational. And we'll see the community continue to grow and continue to mature in all sorts of different ways.
Yeah. Just mentioning really quick at the beginning of our second hour here, if you've tuned in for our friends at the Personal Computer Show, they have the week off, but they will be back next week. This is Off the Hook, and we are broadcasting on WBAI New York 99.5 FM, and we are presenting material from our Hope Conference, our biannual hacker conference, and our basically our pride and joy, where all sorts of awesome stuff happens, some of which you will hear some bits and pieces of. Now, I've been going to the Hope Conference since 2000. Hope 2K was my first one, and the 16 years I've been going to the conference, I've been part of making the conference happen for maybe half that, and it blew me away when I went to my first one. It blew me away again when I went to my second one. Every single one has been better than the ones preceding it. And HopeX is the best conference I think we've ever done. It amazed me in so many ways while it was going on. It still does. And the fact that you can still experience the talks that were presented at the conference on a really convenient video format, either DVDs or a thumb drive. No insulting DRM, nothing stupid like that. But just something that you could watch on your device of choice and your software of choice, and get a taste of what happened. It's a really amazing thing to me that people can do this, because the conference itself is such a special thing, and it really bears revisiting whether you're there or not. So if you call 212-209-2950, or if you go to give to wbai.org and scare up some of these hope panels, you will get to relive that if you were there, experience it for the first time if you didn't, and see what we're going on about and why we're so excited about Hope 11 coming up in July.
The 11th Hope, Rob.
The 11th Hope.
Don't call it Hope 11. We don't just put a number after our conference.
I'm sorry, don't hit.
Everyone is a different concept, a different name, a different set of artwork and all that. 212-209-2950. Yes, everything Rob said is true. And this is something that I think we can all share in, as far as just hearing what's being said, learning, and coming up with ideas for ways to do it better in the future. So hopefully the next conference in July will be even better. And, you know, the one that took place in 2014 was great, not just because we had Edward Snowden, but because we had so many other people as well. And we could have, I think the conference would have been great even if we didn't have Edward Snowden or Daniel Ellsberg or people like that, because there are just so many interesting ideas and demonstrations that we get at these things. So we are going to play an excerpt of Edward Snowden just to prove that he was actually, well, he wasn't there. This is the only time that we would do a video presentation, because obviously he couldn't travel outside of Russia to be with us. But I don't think anybody complained.
I mean, so the talk with Edward Snowden is not just a talk by Edward Snowden,
no.
which would be special enough, but a conversation between Edward Snowden and Daniel Ellsberg, two very distinct generations of whistleblowers, sort of wondering between each other why there was no whistleblowers in the generation between, but talking about their similarities, their differences, and a really fascinating bit of history was made at Hope, and that is just one of the 100 talks you will get if you call 212-209-2950. If you don't like talking on the phone, you can go to give2wbai.org, that's the numeral 2, and pledge there. And get these amazing premiums and keep this radio station on the air, keep this program on the air, keep these conferences coming so that we have more talks to offer you in the future. There's no reason not to do it.
Yeah, and I know people aren't happy when we have to go on the air and ask for money, but would you rather we had commercials? Because if we had commercials, well, that's the other way radio stations stay on the air and pay all the bills. And believe me, you know, we have a lot of bills to pay, but it's nothing compared to what a commercial station occupying the same frequency would be paying, as far as paying all the people on the air and various other things as well. So these are necessary expenses that absolutely need to be made. It's worth it. 212-209-2950.
And the station itself has had to scale back a little bit in the last couple of years with the move and various other bits of turmoil. But the staff themselves, the management, are really doing a tremendous job under the circumstances. And I'll echo what I know Bernie has said, and I know he feels deeply, that people work incredibly hard here, and it is a truly unique community behind the scenes that makes all of this technically possible and fosters this kind of communication and information transfer that we've said is so crucial to what we get out of it, as well as what the community and discussions around some of these issues get, as far as building and evolving the discussion.
You know, so little of the audio that you hear on the internet is truly commercial free. You get stuff, and there's some really great stuff that I listen to where they ask their listeners to donate, and some to which I have donated, and then they play a sponsor announcement, and the sponsor is often an internet infrastructure provider of some sort, who, if they were our sponsor, we could never criticize on the air. It would really limit our freedom of speech, which is why we choose not to do that, which is why we stay within the tradition of the Pacifica tradition, which has been going for 50 years. Our only sponsors are you, the listeners, and that's why we need you to call 212-209-2950 or go to give2wbai.org and show your support.
Not to put